I'm Jim DeLang. I'm the pastor of St. Francis Lutheran Church in San Francisco, where I've been pastor for 7 years. And I am single. I have been married, and I have been single. I have been married for a long time, and I have been single for a long time. That means that I'm old in the eyes of some of you. And I've been happily married, and I have been unhappily married. And I have been happily single, and I have been unhappily single. So I think that I come to this with a certain amount of experience. I guess what I'm trying to do is establish some credibility here. The church I serve has a large number of single people, both gay and straight. Some of the gay people have been with partners for years. Others have never had a permanent relationship. We have some people who are married couples, most of whom do not have children or their children are grown. Others are men and women who are straight and who are living with someone. And in some cases, it's, they've done that before. What I would like to do is that I would like to look briefly at the biblical material. There isn't much, but on single people. And then I'd like to look a little bit at the culture of that time and times past, and then look at the recent past and how men and women got together and what they thought they ought to do when they get together, and then to examine the recent cultural and sociological pattern and talk about choices and have a lot of time for discussion. Now, before we can do the biblical material, I've got to get a Bible. Does anyone have one? So this is the model that is supposed to happen to everybody. And what is read at weddings and so on like this, and is the we talk about in the church as the institution of marriage. Now let me read you something from St. Paul, from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 8, 9, and following. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is well for them to remain single as I do. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to be aflame with passion. Now concerning the unmarried, I have no command of the Lord, but I give my opinion as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is well for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek marriage. But if you marry, you do not sin, and if a girl marries, she does not sin. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the affairs of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly affairs, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried woman or girl is anxious about the affairs of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly affairs, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity, but having his desire under control and has determined this is in his heart, to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So that he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do better. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. If the husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my judgment, she is happier if she remains as she is. And I think that I have the Spirit of God. Well, at the very least, I guess we would have to say that from the scriptures we get a mixed message as to what we should do as far as getting married or not getting married, if you want to take the scripture literally. Furthermore, I think we have to keep in mind that in the world in which the Bible was written, literally just about everyone was married. It was a world in which people were, especially in the Hebrew world of the Old Testament, in which people were betrothed very often as children, which was arranged by their parents. And very often it was to a relative or to a distant relative. People were chosen by the time, people were chosen and betrothed certainly by the time that they were very young teenagers, and by the time a girl was 15 or 16, she was married and could look at a life expectancy probably of 40. Her purpose was to have children and to rear them. And for a man whose life expectancy was about the same, he also had this arranged marriage, but he had available to him additional wives, if he could afford it, or concubines, which also had not the status of a wife, but had status. It was an economic, social, sociological system in order to handle, take care of the larger number of women, a greater number of women than there were men, because the men were getting killed in wars and other things like that. The laws against adultery, when you say, take the commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, really what that literally means is thou shalt not break a marriage. And of course, it's pretty hard to break a marriage if you're not married in the first place. But it was designed, the command was designed to protect women and family and the tribe. Also, the status of women was nowhere equal to that of which we have today. Women were little more than property. They were somewhere between the oxen and men. Okay, they were somewhere just a cut above the oxen. Women did not have a place in the covenant of Israel except through a man. Men were circumcised, and that's how they participated in the covenant of Israel, and women were not. They did through their husbands or through their fathers. It was a world in which nearly everyone was married. Marriage partners were chosen by parents, and people did not marry for love, but for duty. It is almost impossible, then, to look at the biblical material for guidance on male-female relationships apart from marriage, and even then, we have to sift them through a great cultural filter. Because that world was so different than the world in which we live. We do, however, have the biblical material that speaks to all human relationships generally. Love your neighbor as yourself. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? However, it is not the Bible, but the culture of the recent past that has affected present male, female, and gay-lesbian relationships the most. And this is where I want to do a little bit of stuff here. In the United States and England, male-female relationships are very much governed by the Victorian period from 1840 to 1900 and the Edwardian period from 1900 until the outbreak of World War I. On the continent in Europe at the same time, the pietistic movements in the Scandinavian countries, in Germany, and in the Low Countries had very, very much been parallel to this, but were a little different. But it was when it came to the relationships between men and women, it was about the same. Mates were generally chosen by parents, family members, brothers and so on like this, or meetings arranged by parents and family so that candidates for marriage could be screened as potential mates. Dates were only for the purpose of leading to marriage, or courtship as it was called. They were not dates for their own sake. People did not marry either, and dates were always chaperoned, of course. People did not marry outside of their socioeconomic class, and if they did, they were never allowed to forget it. and were often ostracized from the family. In the lower classes, women were chosen for their housekeeping and child-rearing ability, and the upper classes for their beauty and charm to grace a man's table, as it was often said. Now, all of this, of course, is barely a step ahead of viewing women as property. And that's why the suffrage movement in the latter part of the 19th century, by Elizabeth Cady Stanton and others who were involved in the early feminist movement, was in the first part of the 20th century, was such a revolutionary thing, and why it engendered so much hostility in this country and in Britain, because they were going on at the same time, because it threatened the power structure of the whole society. The movement reached its first big step with the passage of the constitutional amendment that gave women the right to vote. But the larger goal of full equality with men and women, that larger goal of the early feminist movement was never fulfilled, or was not fulfilled, because of the Great Depression in this country, and well, it was a worldwide depression, and of World War II. And it was not taken up again until the next generation of feminists, with the publication of Betty Friedan's landmark book, The Feminine Mystique, and the wealth of feminist literature that has appeared since then. But we have to remember that at the time that this next wave of the feminist movement came about, some of those early feminists were still alive, Alice Paul and some of the others. So the present cultural pattern of leaving men and women on their own to meet, to date, and develop relationships is relatively new. We don't really have a whole lot to go on. Parents and families no longer act as yentas. They no longer pick and screen and so on. It is not the responsibility anymore, as it was thought in the past, for a family to seek out potential mates for their children. But not entirely. While a high school campus is designed to get an education, it is also a recognition that there is a great need for boys and girls to try out relationships. And so they have school dances and they have all kinds of social activities that were not part of the milieu of educational life at the turn of the century. Likewise, the college campus is that way. And it is in high school and college where many young people find Mr. or Ms. Wright, which is why parents send their kids off to Lutheran colleges. See, they haven't entirely gotten out of the process. The church, which has a primary responsibility for building a community of faith, also gets involved in the dating game and the matching game. We have youth camps and youth conventions, and in the back of everyone's head, is that, well, maybe I'll go to youth camp, you know, I'll go to youth camp, meet somebody. And mom and dad think the same thing. But what if, after 4 years of high school and trips to youth camp, and after 4 years of college, you still have not met Mr. or Ms. Right? And a good number of Mr. or Ms. Wrongs. Well, there's always Holden Village. Or graduate school. But even if we have, at that point, met Mr. or Ms. Right or Mr. or Ms. Semi-Right, some of us decide that, well, there are other things I want to do. I am not ready yet to get involved and make that kind of commitment. There's a list of things that I want to do, and I'm not ready to do that, even though that, you know, I really love this person and everything else. In other words, we don't have to do that. But you have to be tough, and you have to be resistant, because there's a lot of familial pressure often to say, well, now you finish college. You know, the next step is, you know, as my father said to me, you know, on the day I got married, he says, well, Jim, now all you have left to do is die. I mean, you've gone to college, you've done all this, right? That's all that's left, right? That's the next big milestone. Now, at this point at college, Holden Village or what have you, or graduate school, or because of parental pressure, because some people think in their own minds that they have found someone that is okay, they decide to settle for that. Because they think, it's comfortable, and you know, maybe it'll really work later on, you know, after all, when people got married years ago and the parents picked them out, they didn't pick out people that they thought that was going to make their kids' life miserable. What they assumed was when they picked out someone that would please or would make happy their child. And the assumption was is that you found people who were compatible and who could live together well, and love came later. See, love didn't come first. And what we've done is reversed that process. Others decide to get married because they think, well, you know, there may not be another bus coming. You know, I mean, I may have to just take it for this, right? But what if we haven't met Mr. or Ms. Wright at college, at Holden Village, or graduate school? Then we are out in the cold, cruel workforce, where we are confident we will meet somebody. But there we find very often that a personal relationship can compromise a professional relationship. And so some people discover that it can't work dating somebody that they work with, so they separate that out and they have their social life elsewhere. They join ski clubs, swim clubs, hiking clubs, different kinds of clubs. And some people date a lot. But then they discover that the demands of career and time interfere with the social life a lot more than school did. I mean, you know, you can't go out and stay out until 2 in the morning, and then you have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning to be to work. And on the weekends, you got to do your laundry and clean up the apartment and take your cat to the vet and, all of that kind of stuff and get your clothes. And Sunday night, you got to get your clothes ready for the week. And what do you know? Here we out there doing it again, especially for those who get caught up in the what we call the Silicon Valley mentality, where I'm working 70 hours a week and loving it, you know, as Steve Jobs says, that the people at Apple say. Okay. And when we meet folks in these kinds of settings, we discover that there are a lot of Mr. and Ms. Wrongs, and just a few Mr. and Ms. Semi-Rights, because we are in different places. And very often the things that we had in common with folks in college and in high school was, and at Holden Village, is that we were all thrown in the same setting. We were all in the same boat. And when you're out in the workforce, you know, you're not in the same boat. There are people who are way ahead of you or way behind you professionally or work-wise, so on. Some people usually now in their mid-20s decide to settle for Mr. or Ms. Semi-Right, or even for Mr. or Ms. Wrong. It's kind of, this is my last chance mentality. However, some people decide to hold out a little longer and still say, I'm not ready yet. But for some of us, the world of dating pretty much comes to an end after college, if even we had that many dates there. For others of us, it comes to an end in our mid-20s or shortly thereafter. We never even get an opportunity to say no to Mr. or Ms. Semi-Right. It is then that we often hear the lament, all the good men, women are either married or gay. And we get depressed, single people do. Am I never going to meet someone? Is this it? How long has it been since I've had a date? And we start to think. How long has it been since I've slept with someone? Have I ever? Years, maybe. At this point, some people fall back on the modern version of a previous era, and that is that we go back to this era in which parents and family arranged for us to meet people, and they screened them first, and then we met the people who made the final cut, right? Only now we call this computer and video dating. Now, for some of us, this is just appalling. Only losers, only the worst losers go to a video dating service or a computer dating service. Well, let me tell you, it is a lot better than the bar scene. Or the so-called singles cocktail parties, where you walk in. The dream is you walk in and you do more than walk in, and right across the room your eyes lock. That's it. It's only in novels, folks. Basically, how this works is that, for example, if you join a video dating service, what you do is that you go in and you pay a fee. And you fill out an information sheet, and there are still photographs taken of you and by a professional photographer, and then you do it. There's a video interview. And then what happens is when you join these clubs is then your video is put on a shelf like a library, and so are the pictures. And what happens then is that then you as an individual can go in and you look through the pictures of people. There's a recognition here that all of us go for a different type of person. Who knows why we're attracted to someone who is tall or someone who is short, someone who's petite or someone who has a little bit more. We just are. We go by a lot of physical kinds of appearances initially. And for some reason or another, when you look through these pictures, say, that person looks kind of interesting, so that you go and you look. Their name isn't there. You just see the number, and you get the chance to look at the profile of that person, or you get a chance then to look at the video of that person. You say, "Well, I'd like to meet this person." So what happens then is that person then is sent a postcard by the dating service, saying, "Number so and so, no name. Number so and so, the person would like to meet you, so on." And then the person comes in and they look at your video and all of this kind of stuff. See, and they say, "Well, hey, that might." And if they say no, why? Well, see, there's no rejection involved, right? Right? There's not. That's what people fear. They really fear this rejection, Okay. Now, if the right one comes along, that's great. If not, okay. Now, I know. I have a relative who did that, and that's how she found her husband after about three or four bad starts. Why she met this guy through this, and they've been married for over 20 years and got a couple of kids, and it's as good as a lot of marriages. It's just fine. Now, what some single people face is that, and a lot of single people, I think, more and more are facing this, is that saying, hey, this is it. I'm probably not going to get married, or maybe not. If the right one comes along, great. If not, well, so what? Or maybe they say, I've been married, as some people say, are you married? And I say, no, I've done that. Or people say, do you want an administrative job with the church? I say, no, I've done that, or whatever it is. So, in other words, it's the kind of thing is that sometimes you get to a point in your life where it is that you don't want to do that. Now, a lot of people who have been married a long time and are widowed or divorced, but most of the time widowed, make that decision. We had a wonderful life and a good marriage and everything else like that, but I'm ready to do something else at 65 or 70 or whatever it is. And I've done marriage, I've done family, and I want to do something different. So there is a whole group of permanent, you might say, single people out there, some of who have been married and some who have never been married, and of all various ages. But most of them are over 30. Now we have choices, we permanent single people. We can hold ourselves back from all relationships, hoping that the right one will still come along. And I have a friend that does that. She won't date anybody, unless she's pretty sure that this one has some possibilities. I mean, she won't even explore. I had one woman friend tell me, I just can't conceive myself being with anyone who made less than $650,000 a year. Well, she married a guy that's worth about $4 million. And she was very intentional about this. And some would say mercenaries. And well, now some people say the reverse. I would never marry somebody who's rich. I would marry because of my political and social beliefs. I could never do that. I have to be married to someone, who is a working class person and just living from hand to mouth. And some people are like that. So I couldn't do that. I feel uncomfortable with all that stuff. We have choices. We can hold ourselves back from the relationships until the right one comes along. Or we can pursue relationships with Mr. or Ms. Semi-Right or Mr. or Ms. Semi-Wrong, knowing that these relationships will never go anywhere. But they can stand on their own for what they are. We can develop other relationships. We can develop relationships with other single people of both sexes, which may or may not be romantic or intimate. Or we can choose to live a life that is essentially solitary. Some people enjoy solitude, and they really don't want anybody bugging into their lives beyond a dog or a cat. The point is that we do not have to be married to be happy. We are not half people as single people waiting to be complete. We do not have to be like the one girl you probably read in the Cinderella Complex, if you read that, some of the answers that. She didn't want to buy signature luggage because her name was going to change when she met Mr. Wright. She didn't want to get, makes sense, right? That's planning, right? Or people who don't want to buy a house, they hold off buying a house because, that's something that married people do. It is something that only married people do if you as a single person want to continue to pay the government a lot of taxes. A lot of men don't decorate an apartment. They say, well, I'll wait till I get married and she'll do that. Right? So they kind of just, so their apartment is just sort of looks like their dorm room in college. They're just sort of there until the school year is over, right? And then the years go on. We do not have to be married in order to have children. Some people decide to have children, and they want to have children. Now, in the black community, for example, it is much more common for women especially who decide that they haven't gotten married. That they were married and they're not married now, and so they decide they want to have a family, so they have a family. And it's accepted, or whatever. And there is no reason why a woman, or a man, for that matter, if they want to have children, can't have them in today's society. We do not have to wait until taking that trip we've always wanted to take until we take it with Mr. or Ms. Wright. We can go with Mr. or Ms. Semi-Wright, or with a male or female friend. And the nice things about taking trips with people and you know, and maybe it wasn't such a good idea, is that when you get back home, you can say, you know, you can say goodbye, and you don't have to walk in the house together, which is what a lot of people discover after they come back from their honeymoon, which is. Single people need to hang together, just like married people do. Single people need to create community and bonded friendships that are male and female. My closest friend is a woman that I have been very, very close to, and we talk about everything for over 10 years. And we've always been, you know, never lovers, ever friends. And she's a lovely woman, and everything else. My mother says, why don't you get together with her? She's beautiful, she's rich. And I say, Mother, she's not my type. She says, I understand. My mother is going to be 81 and has outlived two husbands, and she's seeing a guy. Good for her. Now, mistakes that single people make. Some of us live in the wrong places. We grew up in the suburbs, and so we stay in the suburbs because that's what's familiar to us. And the suburbs are married people who are raising families. Now, married people who are raising families don't have any hesitation at all about moving out of cities and into the suburbs, and they don't feel guilty about that at all. What we should do as single people is we should move where there are other single people. And we need to create community and friendships and not be afraid of intimacy and not be afraid of failure in intimacy. And we need each other. And now we're going to talk. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. That's not all I'm going to say. That's the end of my presentation. So what have you got? What do you got here? Tell me about some of your experience. I'm going to leave this. I want to let this time be for single people, and I'd like to get some input from some of you who are just out of college or maybe still in college, and I'd also like to hear from some of you who I know have been married and are now single, and maybe some of you who never married and been out there in the dating scene for a long time, or the non-dating scene, as the case may be. Go ahead.
I was just thinking what a friend was saying about it's not a question of whether they're the right person. The question is, are you the right person? And yeah, a lot of us can love, but do we have the skills to be in a loving relationship?
Yeah.
And that's very good point. I think that's more the issue than finding the right person. You know, are you the right person?
We may not be, what you're saying, you know, I may not be a suitable husband. Doesn't mean that I'm bad. I mean, I may be a great pastor and a great father and a great all kinds of other things. And if I'm not a great husband, that doesn't make me, I think one of the things that we're seeing, that's why we're seeing a change in the cultural pattern, is that, for example, it used to be shocking for a man and a woman to be seen together without a member of the family along. That was shocking. Or to be seen in public together, you know, without being chaperoned. We moved from that to now that just about, as a pastor, well, this was true when I was in the suburban church, and other pastors will tell you the same thing, is that just about everybody who comes to us to get married are living together, and have been for some time. And that's... I'm convinced that out of a respect for the institution of marriage and also because of wanting to be sure. They take that kind of step to see that if it works out. And there are many, many people who have a great deal of hesitation about doing that, you know, of getting involved in that kind, because that involves a kind of a commitment. And when people who are living together break up, it is just like a divorce, especially if they live together for any length of time.
I can't anymore.
That might be a little more freeing up, right?
Rocky. Yeah, right. Well, right. Not until it's rocky either, but I mean, I would make the commitment to work it through.
Yeah.
But most people
do not get married with the intention of getting a divorce.
Right.
I don't know of anybody that gets married with the intention of getting a divorce, unless they're trying to establish citizenship in the United States or something, which happens too.
But the availability of divorce.
Pardon me?
But the availability of divorce has broken up more marriages. How easy it is. $25 now.
Yeah.
It just seems like people don't really work at it as hard as maybe they should sometimes. And
some do and some don't. But the reason that a lot of people were, most of the time people didn't get to stay together before was because of economics. Most of the time women have been trapped economically in marriage.
They're still trapped today, a lot of them.
Yes, that's
right. The availability of divorce and the lawyers advertising, and you can get out real easy. And it just seems like, you know, you go into it and there's going to be tough times.
Well, right, but don't kid yourself. Divorce is not easy. My daughter-in-law is a divorce attorney, and it's never easy. There are some divorces that are relatively simple as far as unraveling the assets and so on, but they never are emotionally.
Well, talking about availability, right. That's out there all the time.
But we want to talk about singleness.
What about the changing roles in women these days, and the fact that they've got their own independence and their own in careers and things, and maybe don't need a man as much, unless the man can meet the woman halfway? My grandma's rolled over in her grave twice, and she isn't dead yet. I'm 30 years old, and I haven't been married, and then she gave up on me when I was 21. And I don't need a man unless he's going to meet me halfway. And I don't want children, and I just don't see, I have a wonderful relationship with a man right now. He's just a beautiful friend of mine. And he's married, and he's telling me, man, why do people even get married? Where I live, I see a lot of miserably married, what I call mommy dearests, sitting there stuck between a diaper pail and a miserable husband, both raising the kids and making the income for the home. And for a woman, it's something I seriously have to say, why get married? I mean, what's wrong with being single?
Exactly.
Other than being lonely, maybe a little bit, but if that's your own responsibility too.
You can be lonely and be married. I've been lonely in marriage, and I've been lonely single, and I can tell you that being lonely married is awful compared to being lonely single. Really, it's really, really is awful.
Yeah, finish line, and here I am, number 8. But I went to this discussion, and the person said, the best advice I ever heard was to really enjoy being who you are today, whether that's being married or whether that's being single. Mm-hmm. That there's pros and cons to both, and you know, what are you going to do with the choice you make?
I'm surprised nobody's brought up the sexual issue. Are you afraid to talk about that? Dead silence, I guess you are.
I mean, with the sexual issue, one of the things that I had a problem with is that I had a tendency to be attracted to men that would make awful husbands. I mean, they just, one of the last men I went with for almost a year, and he's very attractive and did things that I like to do, introduced me to so many different things. And yet he had an alcoholic problem. He had no faith life, which ripped me apart, but at the same time, wanting to be with someone who, you know, could listen to classical music and Prairie Home Companion and do the whole business was, you know, a real delight. And, you know, to find someone that you're sexually attracted to and everything, and in the same time eating away, saying, it can't go anyplace.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, it's got to end, and then to break that. And I find myself getting in situations of attraction, getting involved, and then realizing this would make a horrid marriage. And it would just kill me to be in it, and would no doubt end in divorce, breaking it up, and then finding myself attracted again to another person who would be very unstable in a marital situation.
Yeah, that's a, you know, somebody is falling in love with somebody who's totally wrong for you. You know, that's somebody that's Mr. Wrong or Ms. Wrong. And, you know, the thing is that what we have to be able to recognize is that sometimes it's worth the risk to go ahead and be involved with them, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to marry the person, see? The only thing is that, you know, if you're operating solely with your head and you say that, well, do I want to invest time in this wrong relationship because my heart is all invested here and I'm off the market if I'm looking for somebody that's better. See? Because psychologically, when we're involved with someone and our heart is with someone, why we send out certain signals that says I'm not available when we meet other people. I don't think it addresses it. That's a very, very recent kind of, well, I mean, people did that years ago. You know, they, quote, lived in sin. But see, it was for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, which if you take it literally means is that you're not supposed to leave home until you get married, even the most ardent fundamentalist would not interpret it that way. Especially if they were a parent. a young person. So I don't think that the Bible addresses that. We get, you know, the problem is that the church, and we talked about some of the other sessions, is that we care very much about sex in the church, in the church's definition of morality. We talk about morality, and people equate that with sex. We care very much about who's doing it, how often, with whom, and where. You know, and we get very, very worried about it. And we never ask the question, you know, what harm is it doing? Now, that's very, very easy to answer that question when we look at the commandment, thou shalt not kill. Say, well, why is it, what's behind that commandment? It's because of the great harm it does. The same with stealing, coveting, all of this. The same with adultery, the breaking, you know, where people are unfaithful in marriage. But when you have when you have two single people who are are not married and they decide to live together or they decide to make love or something, yeah, I think the question you ask is, okay, what great harm is this doing? What great harm is this doing? Then it's grand. Yes. If your values and your mindset is that making love with a person is a sort of a preparation for marriage, or is a, you know, that this you have a sexual tie with someone, yeah, then it's pretty dangerous psychologically. Most of the sexual prohibitions that St. Paul talks about were in connection with idolatry. And the idolatry of that had to do with many of the festivals, the feasts, and the rituals that were surrounding the pagan religions, in which there's a lot of prostitution and so on like this, both heterosexual prostitution and homosexual prostitution. The whole thing in the Jewish Hellenistic culture in which people would live together in a romantic or a loving relationship without being married was just unknown. I mean, it wasn't thought about, and it was the whole thing that was part of that too. Is that we have to remember it was a polygamous society. People had, if you were married to someone. You married that person in order to have children. You married that person because of social and class status. All this. You are not expected to be in love with that person. You expressed the idea of eros, the idea of passion, so on. That was expressed outside of marriage. What I mean, this is not to say that it didn't happen sometimes in marriage, but it wasn't. Yeah.
What about what the Bible says about fornication? That would be sex outside of marriage.
Yeah, fornication had to do with it was the same word that we use for harlotry. It has to do with prostitution and those kinds of things. Okay. Yeah.
I would say that you're defining. From a very present-day interpretation of some of the biblical words, traditionally, I think that fornication, immorality, have been interpreted quite differently.
Oh, yes.
And I think that needs to be clear, that that's a much more modern kind of interpretation of what sin is, where many people in our day don't see sin at all in terms of their own personal kind of thing, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. But that's not a traditional point of view, and for some of us as Christians, we would say it's not biblical.
Right. Same thing with the charging of interest. See, the charging of interest up until the Middle Ages was forbidden by the church, and the lending of interest and the reason that they said it because it was usury and all this kind of thing. But then when people did loan money, and if they saw of what benefit it was, of what great benefit it was, then the church changed its interpretation and its understanding of charging interest. Then it became so that you don't charge excessive interest. The other thing is that some of those Bible passages that we talk about, sexual immorality and so on like that, some of those Greek words in as recently as a couple of hundred years ago in English Bibles, or even 150 years ago, were translated as masturbation. There was a great campaign on the part of the church against masturbation, and they said that it was damaging psychologically and physically, and you could tell people who masturbated because they had this hollow look, and there were or a vacant look, and there were people who were elected to public office on an anti-masturbation platform. This is the truth in the 19th century. Yeah.
Yeah, but today that's a problem. That is a sickness.
What?
The over-masturbation.
Oh yeah, well, over-masturbation. Yeah, masturbation as such.
Right.
Right. My congregation. Well, the congregation is no problem with that. Our congregation has accepted gay and lesbian people in our church for 20 years.
Well, how does the church, I mean, what is the church's...
The Lutheran Church?
Yeah.
The Lutheran Church's present stand is that homosexual people who, of homosexual orientation are to be accepted, are to be accepted in the church and so on like this, and are to be loved and cared for and ministered to just like anyone else. But they have said that homosexual practice is a sin. That's where the church is right now. But they have set that standard only for pastors, not for lay people. I mean, that's the... Okay, we have to stop. Thank you. Enjoyed hearing from you. I'd be glad to talk to any of you privately if you want to. I'll be around next week.